So this is joint work with Paridat Aritya, Rodrigo Rodriguez, and Peter Druschel from the Max Planck Institute for Software Systems. So I'm going to start my talk by telling you a little story about a grad student who we're going to call Alice. And Alice has a paper deadline next week, and so she really, really needs a break from all her hard research work. And so Alice decides that she wants to play a game. And so she gets together with two other grad students who we're going to call Bob and Charlie. And they decide that they're going to play a game of Counter-Strike together. So far, there's nothing unusual about this. But during the game, something special happens. And I'm going to show you on the screen what Alice sees. So what you can see here in the background is Bob's character right here. And you can see that Bob is, you know, is using a lot of bullets. Okay, he's shooting and firing all the time. And this is a little bit strange. I mean, it could be that Bob just reloaded his weapon and he has lots and lots of rounds left, but it's a little bit suspicious, don't you think? And so Alice, and so Alice is wondering, you know, what is going on? And so let me tell you that in Counter-Strike, the number of rounds is actually local state. So Bob's machine keeps track of how many bullets or rounds Bob has left to fire. And so when Bob hits the fire button, then his machine sends a fire packet to Alice and decrements the counter. Now, because this is local state, it's not all that hard for Bob to manipulate his software to prevent this counter from decrementing. And so when he does that, then he can just fire as long as he wants, and the counter is, he just always have ammunition left to fire. Now, this is just one out of many, many cheats that are out there. They're all very different, cheats are very creative, and they're being used all the time. I think we can all agree that, you know, cheating is a really serious problem in itself. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. And because in-game state can be worth real money, cheaters can cause a lot of damage. Since this is in Canada, there's a case of a Canadian cheater who made $700,000 in cheating just in 1 year, and he bought a house with the winnings. But I want to emphasize that this talk is not about cheating, and it's not about games. It's about a much more general problem of which cheating and games are just one instance. And the problem is that oftentimes users rely on software executing on a third-party machine. And, you know, for example, this could be a competitive system like an auction, a federated system, peer-to-peer system, and so on. And in all these cases, it would be really useful to tell whether the software on this remote machine is executing as intended. Now, we want users like Alice to be able to do two things. First of all, we obviously want her to be able to tell whether the software is executing as intended. But we also want Alice to be able to obtain evidence to demonstrate to a third party that the software has not executed as intended. And you can think of the gaming scenario to see why this is important. Because once Alice detects that Bob has been cheating, she's going to go to Charlie and say, you know, we shouldn't play with Bob anymore, he's cheating. But then, of course, when Charlie confronts Bob, Bob is going to say, no, I would never cheat. Never an Alice, never an anybody. And so in this case, in such a he said, she said situation, it's really useful to have some kind of strong evidence that demonstrates the fault. Now, this is a difficult problem, because in general, we can't assume that Alice and Bob trust each other. So we don't know what Bob might do to his machine. You know, we can't make any assumptions about the fault, kinds of faults that we might be seeing. And also, it's not clear that Alice and Bob will understand how the software works. So we have some great system that, you know, allows you to do all this detection and generating evidence, but it doesn't help Alice or Bob if they don't understand how the software works. If they don't have the source code, maybe it's just a binary, they don't have a specification, nothing. Now, so far, I've told you about the problem that we want to solve, which is finding out whether software in a remote machine that we don't control is executing as expected. And I've told you about one example or one instance of this problem, which was cheating in multiplayer games. Next, I want to show you the solution that we've developed, which is accountable virtual machines. And I'm going to show you some evaluation results from experiments where we actually use accountable virtual machines to detect cheating in Counter-Strike. And then I'm going to conclude. So before showing you how AVMs work, I'm going to start with an overview. And so when Alice wants to run some software in Bob's machine, then Bob is going to install what we're going to call an accountable virtual machine monitor, or AVMM. And the AVMM is going to instantiate an accountable virtual machine. Now, when Alice gives her software image to Bob, Bob is going to load this image into the AVM. And the AVM is going to create a log of all the network messages that the software sends or receives. So when the software is sending packet to Alice, then we're going to copy the packet into the log. When Alice sends a packet to the machine, then again, we're going to store a copy of this packet in the log. And also, when the machine communicates with somebody other than Alice, for example, other players like Charlie, then again, we're going to store copies of those packets in the log. And the idea is then that Alice can use this log, can download this log, and inspect it, compare it to the behavior of her reference image. And if there is an execution of her reference image that, given the same inputs and the same state, produces the same outputs, then we're going to say that the AVM is correct. Otherwise, we're going to call the AVM faulty. Now, there's three things about this definition that I want to point out. The first is that we're really comparing the behavior of the machine to the behavior of the reference image. So Alice has to trust that her reference image is doing the right thing. So we're not going to try to find bugs in the reference image or some kind of vulnerabilities. She has to trust that the image is doing the right thing. Also, I said that Alice wants to check this log. And this is difficult because if we don't trust Bob, then we have to assume that maybe Bob manipulates this log. Maybe he lies about the contents of the log. And then finally, I said that Alice performs the check by checking whether there is an execution of a reference image that, given the same inputs, produces the same outputs. But of course, there could be many, many executions of any non-trivial piece of software, and Alice can't possibly hope to check them all. Now, our solution consists of two pieces, and the first piece is temp-evident logging. Now, for this part, we use a technique from peer review, but in case you're not familiar with it, I'm going to briefly recap how this works. The log in which we record the messages is going to be structured as a hash chain, meaning that for each entry in the log, we're going to have a hash value that's going to be the hash of the entry and the previous hash value. So all the hash values are kind of linked together in this long chain of hash values. And when the machine wants to send a message, we're going to record this message in the log, which results in the creation of a new hash value, and then we're going to include that hash value together with the signature, with the machine's cryptographic key, in the message. Now, the effect this has is if Bob or the machine manipulates the log by changing something after the fact, then this changes the hash value and all the subsequent hash values. And it creates an inconsistency between the hash values in the log and the hash values that are included in previous messages. And this is something we can use to detect that the log has been tampered with. Now, the overall outcome of this is that one of two things. The first outcome is that Alice detects that the log has been tampered with. And this is a good outcome because now Alice has evidence that, you know, the machine or Bob has been misbehaving. But the other outcome is also good for Alice, because if there has not been any tampering, then now Alice has a complete and correct record or account of everything that has been going on the machine. Now, the second part is going to be execution logging. Now, remember that I said Alice would have to determine whether the log matches some correct execution of her reference image, and that this is difficult because there's so many executions and she can't examine them all. Our solution is to have the AVMM specify one specific execution by recording initial information in the log. And the information that we record are all the non-deterministic inputs that the AVMM receives, such as things like interrupts or inputs from local peripheral devices and so on. And using this log, Alice can replay it to her trusted copy of the reference image, of the software image, and can see whether she gets the same outputs. Now again, there are two possible outcomes of this. One is that the AVM is correct, in which case, because the replay is deterministic, Alice will get exactly the outputs that are recorded in the log if she replaces the inputs. Then she can convince herself that the machine is correct. But the other outcome, if the machine is faulty, or if the AVM is faulty, then there's really no correct execution that the machine could record in the log, so replay inevitably fails. And this is really the crux of the matter. Because if the machine is faulty, there's really nothing that it could record in the log that would pass Alice's checks. Now, I'm going to show you, using an example, how auditing works. And so I'm going to assume that Bob is playing Counter-Strike, like in our initial example, and that he has installed this particular cheat that allows him to fire an unlimited number of rounds. And so when he's using this cheat, he might get a log like this. So something happens initially, the mouse is moved, he gets a message from Alice, then he clicks the fire button, and the machine produces lots and lots of fire messages. Now when Alice audits Bob's machine, she's going to download a copy of the log and she's going to inspect it for tampering, and let's assume there's no tampering. And then Alice is going to instantiate an AVM on her local machine and loads it with the software image that she trusts that she gave Bob earlier. And then she's going to replay the inputs in the log to that image. Right? So she feeds in the mouse movement, okay, then the same message comes out. Then she feeds in the mouse click, and then some fire messages come out. But because the image that Alice is using does not contain the cheat, eventually the machine is going to run out of ammo and stops sending these fire messages. And that causes a discrepancy that will indicate to Alice that the machine is faulty. And then she can ring the alarm. Also, because all these steps are deterministic, Alice can use the log and the software image as evidence and give that to a third party. And the third party can repeat all these steps and then also notice the discrepancy between what's in the log and what it gets during the replay step. Now, the properties that we get out of AVMs are the following. First of all, we get strong accountability, meaning that we can detect faults, and that we can produce evidence of such faults that convince a third party. And we can do this without producing false positives, meaning if you report a fault, there actually is one. The technique works for arbitrary unmodified binaries. And this is true because we can use the virtual machine monitor to extract all the information that we need, including the non-deterministic events and the network I/O that the machine produces. And a short way of saying this is that if you can run it in a VM, it will also work in an AVM. And then somewhat surprisingly, it turns out that Alice doesn't have to trust Bob or the AVMM or any software that runs on Bob's machine other than that. And the reason for this is that if Bob tampers with the log, Alice can detect this because of the tamper-evident log. And if the machine is faulty, again, there is no correct execution of the reference image that the machine could record in the log. So Alice's replay will inevitably fail and cause a divergence during replay. Okay, so far I've told you about the problem that we're trying to solve, and I've described our solution, which are accountable virtual machines. Next, I want to show you some results from our evaluation using cheating in Counter-Strike. Now, for our experiments, we built a prototype AVMM, and for this we used the logging and replay engine in VMware Workstation, which is a very mature virtual machine monitor. And this we extended with the mechanisms for tamper-evident logging and for auditing. And for our experiments, we set up a scenario that tries to model a setup that you could find in a LAN party or in a Counter-Strike competition. So we had three players playing Counter-Strike 1.6, and they were using the Halo machines, and these we chose because they have very good support for virtualization. And the guest operating system was Windows XP Service Pack 3. Now, in the paper, we have lots of evaluation results, but I don't have time to go into all of them, so I'm going to pick some of them, and I'm going to have to refer to you to the paper for the others. So the first question is, does it work for real cheats? And the answer at a high level is that if the cheat needs to be installed together with the game in the AVM, then AVMs can trivially detect it. So let me show you why that might be the case. So remember that I told you that Bob has to record in the log all the network I/O and all the non-deterministic inputs. But in addition to this, he also has to record a lot of details that will allow us to inject those inputs at the same point during the replay execution. And these include things like the branch counter or the instruction pointer that will specify a precise point in the execution. Now, if Bob installs a cheat, okay, for example, a cheat that will allow him to always automatically hit Alice when he hits the fire button, then what that means is that the AVM now is executing different code, has different data, the control flow changes, and so on. And this will change all these details in the log. And what that means is that when Alice now replays such a log using the correct software, then she inevitably gets a discrepancy, a divergence. And to test whether this is actually true for real cheats that people use today, we sampled 26 real cheats from the internet, from Counter-Strike discussion forums, and we examined them, and all of them would have been detectable using this method. But of course, now you're going to ask, couldn't, once cheaters know that AVMs exist, couldn't they adapt their cheats to evade detection? And the answer is, well, there's really three, like, okay, by moving the cheat to the AVMM, for example. And the answer is, there's really three types of cheats. One, there's cheats that we can't detect in principle. For example, players colluding with each other, right? Because this happens outside of our system, we can't detect it. There's a second class of cheats where we can guarantee detection. And these are cheats that change inherently change the network visible behavior of the machine, like send additional messages and so on. And this is true for at least 15% of the cheats that we examined in our sample. And then there's a third class where we can't guarantee detection, but it becomes technically very difficult. Okay. And so let me explain why this is the case. So remember that in order to evade detection, the cheater would have to produce a correct execution of the reference image that has exactly the same effects as the effects that he produced during the actual execution. And, well, kind of an attempt that Bob could make at this would be to add some more inputs to the log. Right? He might pretend that before he hit the fire button, Bob had moved the mouse up 1 inch and right 1 inch or something like that. But you'll notice there's a lot of blanks still left in the log. So, for example, we could have to inject additional interrupts to kind of deliver these mouse inputs. We would have to make up good values for the branch counter instruction pointers. There's all this detail that the cheater would have to come up with to evade detection. And I can't guarantee that this is impossible, but it's at least much more difficult than what cheaters do today. Now, another question that many Counter-Strike players would want to ask is, what does this do to my frame rate? And to answer this question, like, the frame rate is the rate at which the game can display and render new sceneries from the game. And to answer this question, what we did was we disabled the FPS, like the frame rate cap, and we measured the frame rate on bare hardware, where we can go up to about 158, I think, frames per second. And you see three different bars here because we have three different players that all play slightly different strategies. They go through different parts of the game and so on. So the average frame rate differs slightly. When we run the same experiment on accountable virtual machines, we get about 13% drop in the frame rate. And this is not much in relative terms, and it's also, like, in absolute terms, you're still left with a lot of frames per second, and about twice as much as is typically recommended in Counter-Strike discussion forums. Now, we also wanted to find out where this overhead comes from. And so we ran different experiments, successively enabling different features of the accountable virtual machine. So we went from bare hardware to virtualization without logging, then we enabled logging, then we enabled accountability but no crypto, and then we enabled the full AVMM. And the data that we got shows that the biggest drop actually occurs when we enable execution logging. This is responsible for a drop of about 11%. And so you can see that accountability costs you only about 2% in addition to this. Now, another question is, how much do I have to pay for auditing? Right? So suppose we play a one-hour game. How much data do I have to download to audit the player? And how much time do I need to replay the whole log? Now, we measured this in one of these Counter-Strike games, and we found that the log that the AVMM produces grows by about 8 megabytes per minute. And this compresses really well, so if you apply compression, you end up at about 2.5 megabytes per minute, and that means that you have to download after a one-hour game about 150 megabytes. So that's not too bad. You can easily do this over a broadband connection. Also, the question is, how long does it take to replay this log? And here the answer is, because replay has to repeat all the steps that were taken during the original execution, it's going to take, and the game was constantly busy rendering frames, it's going to take about as much time as the game itself. I forgot to say that it's not much more than the log that you get in VMware. Okay. So replay takes as much time as the game itself. And that's a little bit of bad news, because imagine that you're playing this game for 1 hour, and then you have to wait another hour to be told that somebody has cheated. But fortunately, we have a solution for this. And the solution is online auditing. So it turns out that the idea here is that we're going to stream log entries during the game to the auditor. So if Alice wants to audit Bob, then during the game, we're going to send incrementally new log entries from Bob to Alice, and Alice is going to replay it while the game is still in progress. And you might imagine that, you know, this is going to caused the frame rate to drop quite significantly, because now we have to play the game and replay another game. But it turns out that because these machines that they're using have four cores, and only two of those cores are currently busy, one doing the game, one doing the logging, we can use these additional cores to do the replay without much overhead to the frame rate. So it turns out that if we audit one player during the game, then we're still about, you know, at about 130 frames per second. Okay? So there's not much of a difference. And because you'll notice that we have one core left, we can also audit the other player at the same time. So now we're playing the game, and we're auditing two other players at the same time. And still, we're around 100 frames per second. Right? So this is still way above the 60 to 80 frames that have been recommended. And so we can use these cores to replay at the same time. And the benefit that we get from this is that we can detect cheats within seconds after they occur. Now, in summary, accountable virtual machines offer strong accountability for unmodified binaries. So if you buy Counter-Strike in the store, you throw it in an AVM, it's going to work without modifications. And this is useful when you rely on software executing rogue machines, and not just in games, but also in federated systems, in competitive systems, peer-to-peer systems, and so on. And we can do all this without requiring any trusted components. Our experimental results show that AVMs are practical, and we have this prototype implementation that we built based on VMware Workstation, and I showed you some results from our evaluation for cheat detection in Counter-Strike. And I'm going to close this talk by thanking all of our enthusiastic Counter-Strike volunteers. We played many hours of Counter-Strike to make this all happen. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to take questions.
Neil Walfield, Johns Hopkins. You say that you can detect that Bob cheated, but what if Bob didn't actually cheat? He was sabotaged. In Counter-Strike, that's not a big problem, but other applications of this might cause him to go to jail.
So if Bob didn't cheat, but do what?
He was sabotaged.
Oh, he was sabotaged. Okay, so if Bob was sabotaged, then you still have a complete record of everything that happened on Bob's machine, right? So Bob, you can reproduce what happened. And so Bob actually has some hope of demonstrating that his machine was broken into and that this was an outside cause. Right? So not all is lost.
Thank you.
Okay. Unless I'm misunderstanding, you said that a lot of the difficulty in forging a log is just the difficulty in coming up with a plausible trace of execution that, mm-hmm. that Alice could then replay and not detect an error. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
So would it be possible for the malicious party to also run another unmodified instance in the background in a similar way to the replay instance that Alice might run in order to get a plausible looking log?
You could run two copies of the game, but it would be completely independent, right? You couldn't use the log that are recorded on one machine to return in response to an audit of the other machine, because the authenticators that you issued from the one machine are signed with the one machine's key, right? So the other machine would not match. I'm not sure if I got your question correct.
But I'm not sure. But I thought you said there aren't any trusted software components. So can't Bob, the malicious party, just use whichever keys are necessary to make it look right?
True. So Bob could give his keys to another machine, but all the outputs of the other machine would also be considered to be outputs of Bob's machine, right? So the identity is given by the keys. Not sure. Maybe we should take this offline.
All right, sure. Peter Chen, University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that you may be underselling your results, which is unusual. So I think you guarantee that you will detect the error, the cheat, unless the cheater can produce an input that could have produced that network output. Mm-hmm. And so you gave one example where they're basically changing the inputs to aim more accurately.
Right.
And is it really true that most of the cheats take the form of changing the inputs? I mean, for example, the extra bullets doesn't fall in that category.
Right.
So maybe you could help by confirming that what exactly the equivalence class of cheats that you can detect or cannot detect are.
Right. So cheats that we can detect are all the cheats that change the network visible behavior, that cause the network outputs and inputs of the machine to be inconsistent with any correct execution of the reference image. Right. So this was the definition that I brought up initially. This one here, right? So if your cheat causes the network in and output to be inconsistent with any correct execution, then we're guaranteed to detect it. But also, like less fancy cheats, the one that I demonstrated where Bob just installs some software in the AVM that causes the control flow to be different and the kind of code to be different, that's also something we can cheat, but it could be rewritten in a way that it couldn't be detectable. Right?
Sure. So those are trivial to detect because of the things like branch counters are very fragile, but it seems like most of the cheats would involve coming up with that there would be no inputs that could produce that series of outputs.
Right. In such case,
and you would detect those, all of those, right?
Yeah, we can detect those.
Hi, Mike Friedman, Princeton. I guess I had a kind of related follow-up question. It sounded like the cheats that you were detecting were related to both state checking, more like make sure the server doesn't equivocate, and also things that are causally related, that you can't have one person all of a sudden move after he would have been attacked. But what you didn't discuss this is in terms of things that are about concurrency. And a lot of what is hard in games and, you know, at that level, it's about who fires first and who jumps, you know, as things fly at one another. So I wondered if you, for example, just throw down a proxy in the network that is capturing communication in both directions and will just delay somebody's, if it detects that two people in line of sight, just delays one a little bit. So I don't think that this could protect against that attack. But the broader question is, this is a little bit to follow up Peter's comment, is could you talk about he was talking about equivalency classes, but or type in terms of consistency or something, what the model is that AVM protects against? Because it seems like, on one hand, that definition looks strong, and on the other hand, it somewhat looks weak in what it could guarantee. Is there, let's say, is it true that basically it could handle all cheats except things that are concurrent?
So concurrency at the AVM level wouldn't influence the detectability, right? Because we can record the sequence of events in the VM, right? So if thread one executes first and then thread two, right, that's not a problem.
Right, well, that's why I said put a proxy in the middle, right?
Right. I think what you're talking about is the timing of inputs, right? So can I delay an input, like an input packet or...
Correct, concurrency from a distributed systems point of view.
Right. So these things, like if you can manipulate a legitimate input, such as the timing, right, to achieve the effect that you want, then we can't guarantee detection.
So,
Thanks. Okay. Hi, Jack Sun, University of Toronto. Mm-hmm. So my question is, what if the program that you're dealing with has non-deterministic output? So for example, 50% of the time, you know, you would fire a big bullet and 50% of the time you fire a small one. Well, I mean, you know, this would apply to, you know, games like World of Warcraft and stuff like that, you know,
right.
More
right.
Magical based.
So, like randomness in that sense is not a problem for us because at the VM level, everything is deterministic, right? So if you have a pseudo random number generator in the AVM that produces this, that decides whether to fire a big bullet or a small bullet, then during replay, the same decision will be made because you're getting the same random number. And so therefore, everything will still be deterministic.
Okay. Günther Cornell. So you're doing the logging at the VM level. But the messages are being delivered to the application, and therein lies a lot of freedom in how you actually sequence those inputs that you have received. So wouldn't the ideal cheat be something that injects into the input stream a gazillion events where the, you know, there's always mouse left, you know, 500 times and mouse right 500 times to leave you in your same spot most of the time, but when you decide that you're about to get hit, you just say, well, I failed to, you know, I did not actually get those mouse right events and I processed them later. So it seems that the logging is not at the level, either you're making an assumption about how the application is processing these events, first come, first served, always in sequence, or perhaps you're not dealing with this case at all and there is this attack.
So the logging at the level of the VM, right, so when the network packet arrives in the AVM, right, from that point everything is captured by our logging, right? So between the point where it enters the AVM and the point where it's seen by the application, everything can still be captured, right? So that wouldn't be an issue. Now, what you said was if I could produce inputs at a very high rate, like if I just jitter back and forth, right, then it depends on whether your application actually allows this to happen, right? So if, is this a legitimate input or is this some kind of inertia that kind of you can't go back and forth a million times a second, right? And most applications would have these characteristics, right? So you can't move a real mouse that fast.
So you're going to do rate limiting to try to avoid this attack, because it seems to me that I could just inject this into the input stream.
No, so remember when I said that Alice has to trust her reference image to do the right thing, right? So if your reference image considers it to be legitimate that you can move yourself back and forth a million times a second, then that's not something that we can detect, right? So it has to be behavior that the reference image does not exhibit.
Okay, thanks.
Brad Karp, UCL. I just have a question about how privacy interacts with the applicability of your system. You know, it seems like you're sharing quite a bit of information about the execution with, actually, in the case of a game, somebody who's literally your adversary, oddly enough.
Yeah.
I would think that there would even be games where there'd be information you wouldn't want to share. And if you were trying to broaden beyond games, and I guess I'm asking, are you making claims about things beyond games or not? Mm-hmm. Because if you're hoping about accountable cloud computing, for example, seems like there are some big privacy concerns.
Yes. So let me see. So the answer is that... true that we're quite verbose in terms of what we're logging, right? And this is kind of, it's the cost of the generality of the approach, right? Because we want to be so general, we can't really be very specific in what we're trying to log. But the impact really depends on, you know, what you're doing, right? So for example, if you're doing a cloud computing scenario, then if I'm paying for the cycles on the other machine, why shouldn't it be okay for me to see what the machine has been doing, right? So if I'm auditing my own machine, it should be fine. Right,
because there can be sensitive data that you don't get to see. That's an input that, you know, is not known to you, but yet influences the results that you're computing. That might be one reason.
Right. So, like that kind of privacy, like it has to be okay for you to, for the auditor to see the data that the machine has been processing. Right. And so for the gaming scenario, that's true because it's okay for you to see the execution of the game on the other machines. Right. But I can claim that it's true for all possible applications.
Okay, so but even in a game, somebody could have some special object or something that they don't want you to know about, or they could be discussing strategy with other players against you, and they might not want you to see that, just even in an IM kind of way.
Yes, so if you're worried about this, then what you can do is you can delay the online auditing a little bit. So you don't allow
me
to see...
then you don't get to find out that somebody was cheating for longer.
Right, okay. Then you have some delay.
Okay. Thanks. Next and last question.
Josh Triplett, Portland State University. I was just wondering, it seems like you can cover just about any form of cheating that just plain couldn't happen with the legitimate execution of the program. So no amount of skill is going to make seven bullets come out of a six-shooter. But on the other hand, I don't see anything that stops you from, or that makes it possible to detect cheats that are... you know, how do you tell the difference between skill and a computer? And those would be things like if the game for some reason shares, the classic was sharing information about the entire map, what's to stop the player from making all the walls invisible? Mm-hmm. Or from, you know, as long as you generate the appropriate mouse events from having an aimbot of some kind, and you could be that good. So there's no way to really tell the difference between those two. You can generate a plausible execution that matches that cheater.
So remember how I talked about these three classes of cheats, right? Ones where you can guarantee detection, where it's not possible, and where it's hard. So anything that kind of that's about information leakage, right? That's something we can't do with this kind of technology, right? So kind of information leaking out, we can't detect, right? And then the idea of like making up a correct execution that's compatible with the network outputs you're producing, it's possible that it's very, very hard.
Okay, let's thank the speaker once more.